An hour after the sun passed the zenith, an orange and white Sea Knight chopper appeared, headed roughly toward them. The sky had cleared in the morning, leaving Anya and Bhima exposed to the mercies of the sun. She did her best to shade the now delirious man with her rapidly sunburning body. Rather irrationally, Anya stood up in the launch and waved. The chopper was clearly looking for the Ozymandias, or survivors, and there was nothing else on the sea from horizon to horizon.
Over here! Over here!
The big helicopter swept 200 feet overhead. Faces, surrounded by helmets, peered in amazement from the open side of the hatch at the spectacle of a tall woman wearing a sports bra and cargo pants hopping up and down, waving her arms like a fool. She recognized the insignia of the Republic of the Philippines Armed Forces. Within 10 minutes, she had been winched up from the launch and hauled inside the Sea Knight by crewmen. A medic attended to Bhima, still alive but barely, strapped to a stretcher on the deck. She had insisted he be taken aboard first. The helicopter had already dropped its snout and accelerated forward with a rising growl of its twin turbine engines. The launch had been left behind to the mercies of the sea. There was nothing to suggest any men had lost their lives on the small craft. Anya had bailed out as much blood as she could. As for the blood that soaked her pants and Bhima's uniform, that was assumed to have leaked from the wounded soldier. Of course, if the rescue crew realized she had killed any South China Sea pirates in the boat, it wasn't likely to lower her esteem in their eyes. But she didn't want people talking. If the wrong officials heard talk like that, they were going to ask inconvenient questions. Anya spent much of the next 2 days in the port city of Zamboanga answering questions. The questions weren't terribly pointed, resulting, she guessed, from her possession of a U.S. passport. She had it, along with her wallet and credit cards, in a buttoned pocket of her pants. She claimed she had been aboard a freighter bound for Rimba Perak, doing research for a Chasing History's Monsters episode she intended to pitch on modern-day pirates. Her ever-pleasant interrogator didn't quite seem to get it. Mr. Baksa spoke English well. Middle-aged, with gray liberally dusting the tightly curled black hair that surrounded his large head like a cloud, he had a round belly on a slight frame, wrapped in an indifferently tailored suit. He had thick horn rims in an inside pocket of his jacket, which he took out to read things. Mostly she played hysterical American woman again, claiming to remember few details of the experience. The sudden night attack, shooting, shouting, a badly wounded guard who heroically helped her escape. That she was too freaked out to give a clear account was neither implausible nor unexpected. The horrors of a pirate attack were too well known to the Philippine authorities. She hated to foster that particular stereotype about females, but she knew it would play into the perception that Western women were pampered and impractical. Anya's thoughts were also on Bhima. She was terribly afraid that he would die from a combination of the wound, blood loss, and dehydration, even though there had been bottles of drinking water in the boat.
The young man was flown out aboard the Rimba Perak Armed Forces air transport this morning. The Sultanate's government asked my government to repatriate him as soon as possible. They have promised a full transcript of any information he is able to give them, provided he survives. It appears that he will. And both the Ozymandias and the pirates who took her have vanished without a trace. It is a depressingly common story. Miss Creed, my instincts tell me that much of what you have told us is fabricated. However, the evidence indicates that you are an innocent victim of a vicious attack. My instincts also tell me that whatever knowledge you might be keeping from us is by no means guilty knowledge. Indeed, something tells me you played a far more active role in the escape than that poor sailor. It's a miracle he could walk, much less fight off South China Sea pirates. In any case, I doubt that you could tell us anything more that would be of use. Even if we knew who was responsible, there isn't much we could do about it. These pirates have protection. And I don't just mean weapons. You are free to go, Miss Creed. I hope that I have not wronged you, and I hope for both your sake and that of my republic that your business does not bring you back to our archipelago again for a good long time.
The next morning, a Philippines Airlines 737 deposited Anya at the Sultan Rashid International Airport in Mariapuri, capital and principal seaport of Rimba Perak. Mr. Baksa had kindly arranged to have Anya's backpack, including her cell phone and notebook computer, brought from her hotel room in Mati. With so little luggage and ever-helpful Chasing History's Monsters credentials, she cleared customs with surprising quickness. The process featured neither the hinting and grubbing for bribes characteristic of the Third World, nor the rudeness and suspicion that characterized the First. Shouldering her pack, she turned toward the exit of the small but blindingly modern airport. Two men materialized out of the crowd before Anya. One, bearded and broad-shouldered, stood taller than she, leaving aside his turban. He looked Indian to her, probably Sikh. The other was a small, exceedingly neat man, bareheaded, with receding, black, slicked back hair. Both wore conservative suits and ties.
Miss Anya Creed?
Yes.
The man in the turban showed Anya a shield in a leather carrier.
We are from the Sultanate of Rimba Perak's Department of Public Safety. We must request that you accompany us, please, Miss Creed.
Of course.
Anya mostly agreed because she knew she had no choice and that there was no point in antagonizing them. Of course, it might not make much difference. She wasn't sure if she hoped they were who they said they were, or if she hoped that they weren't.